This is Art in Focus, brought to you by the McMullen Museum of Art at Boston College. My name is Nisha Momin, class of 2021 and a McMullen student ambassador. I'd like to welcome you in listening to our second installation of four episodes on the Indian Ocean Current Six Artistic Narratives exhibition. This episode features Professors Andrew Grant and Mara Willard of the International Studies Department. Thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoy.
I'm Professor Mara Willard. I'm teaching in the International Studies program at Boston College, and this is my third year. I teach the Ethics, Religion, International Politics class that seniors take before they graduate, and I teach seminars also often to seniors. One of them is this semester, Climate Change and the Religious Imagination, and that's the class that I found to be really relevant for this installation. So I brought students from that seminar at the beginning of the semester to walk through as part of our course material. And I'm teaching a class also called Bodies Politic, which thinks about geopolitics and also the way that individual bodies, which are shaped by culture and by family, by religion, by responsibilities of sort of citizenship and sexuality, how those are lived out as part of geopolitics or as ways into understanding the human condition. And I know my colleague, Andrew Grant, because we were co-teachers for a class that sophomores in our International Studies program took when they entered the program, and this is called Where on Earth? And this is a class in historical geography, which is a new idea to me, but I found it incredibly powerful, and I've learned a lot from working with Professor Grant, both designing this class and just getting to know him a little more. We work next door to one another in Connolly House. So I'll hand it over to you to introduce yourself.
Thank you very much, Mara. I'm Professor Andrew Grant, and I work in the International Studies program as well. And I am a geographer by training. So this is my second year at Boston College, so it's been fun, as Mara was saying, to teach geography-themed courses and to collaborate with her and other professors to sort of do this new class, Where on Earth, where I'm also teaching some mapping software. But what I have done with this course is I taught a lecture course last spring called Contested Borders Between Security and Migration. So there was an assignment where students went down and they checked out the exhibit, and then they reflected on this sort of with the condition of crossing borders and borders changing, and a number of the art pieces spoke directly to that or right are open to interpretation to kind of push our course ideas through it. So Professor Willard's course on climate change, I think that was sort of an element in the Contested Borders class that I wish I would have we would have taught or spoken more about in its relationship to migration. And I see that not only are you teaching a course on climate things, but the art piece that you had sort of picked out in particular to talk about today, I think really speaks to that in an interesting way. So I look forward to our conversation.
Me too. I should mention that my training is in religious studies. Part of what's fun and interesting about international studies at BC is we are all coming from different parts of the university. And so I'm bringing what I've studied about primarily the Christian tradition, to a lesser extent the Jewish tradition, to my students. And Professor Grant brings his studies in geography to us. And then we have colleagues also in history, Southeast Asia, that are experts in some of the arts and the ideas behind your installation. So, Andrew, what were some of the ways that you found the art spoke to your research? If we can just dork out a little bit and be scholars.
Well, I suppose right off the bat, when I first walked into the exhibit, Shiraz Baiju's art, in which she's taking maps of the Mauritius Islands and sort of framing them and centering attention on these very small islands that I think most people who would be sort of cruising a world map would not recognize. That was something that sort of gathered my attention. And I'd say, you know, one of the things that I think is interesting about centering such a small island like these islands where there's like one sort of mountain in the middle Izzy draws attention to, I guess you could say, difference, just seeing not only is the topography different, but you can imagine how in these coastal areas on the islands, you've had for hundreds or thousands of years, different groups of people coming to them and bringing different languages and cultural traditions and sort of economic systems of exploitation, which is one of the emphases of the photography that's linked to that art project. I believe the pieces are called Unexpected Quarantines, where the idea is you have some of these groups that are slaves or indentured servants to some degrees who are being kept on the islands, in some cases sort of warehoused on the islands, and how they're plugged into sort of empires that reach across the Indian Ocean. And I think it's really interesting when you're looking at this, because one of the other, you know, things often when we're watching Pirates of the Caribbean or something like this, is islands end up being these sort of romantic free places, right? It's where the pirates go, totally beyond the reach of the state. But at the same time, a lot of these islands, they're not really so much beyond the reach of the state as they've been, you know, their histories are totally influenced by colonialism, by capitalism, by all these, you know, systems of exploitation and making money for somebody else, where the islands are sort of, it's their accessibility that makes them actually great places for, you know, in the eyes of the colonial government in order to keep and exploit people. So it was, I thought by recentering attention on the islands, it kind of brings forward this tension of the accessibility of the island and the sort of idea of like untrammeled movement and freedom. And at the same time, once you actually take more seriously the history of these places, you get to see how they're unfree as well.
Yeah, that's interesting. Grim, but interesting. It makes me think about like how certain histories are legible or illegible to different populations, like how we might have the cartography, which is like this island on its longitude and latitude, but we may not be able to know who's lived there or which crops or which quarantines, which empires. That's neat.
Yeah, and I think another interesting thing as well that speaks to that is for that specific installation, they have, right, these cartographic images that are basically, like, you can see the topography, but they're also, like, almost blank-looking other than that. In fact, one of them, I looked it up, I think it's Aldabra Island, which is north of Madagascar, and it's actually a lagoon in the middle, but the way it's represented is it looks like it's land, but it's actually all water. But then that's juxtaposed with photographs that actually, and I thought of you, Mara, what you might interpret out of them, because they're showing, like, cemeteries and, like, religious sites of different traditions that are photos from these same islands. I mean, that's totally a way of making visible what the cartography renders invisible.
Yeah, these really thick descriptions through the photography that's showing you, like, these, they're inhabited, the space is meaningful, the difference between the cross or the flag or the prayer flag or the Star of David are these inscriptions that come from all over the world are meaningful. So as you sort of connect me to the city of religion, I think one of the first things I felt when I walked in the exhibit was how raw it is. I don't know if that's an ethical word to use or not, but and we still have a certain kind of polish at Boston College. And I think when you walk into the foyer of the McMullen Museum and you see the stained glass that welcomes you, you sort of get that continued polish. And I found it really powerful and compelling to be in this Indian Currents exhibit, because it's it reminded me of what Toni Morrison refers to as art that bleeds. And this was bleeding in a different way from the crucifixes in our classrooms. It was really art that was big and strong enough, I think, to make the Boston College world feel pretty local and parochial, and instead to feel ourselves amidst these huge currents, whether it's this the installation of that rubber, to me it looked like a grenade that would have been constructed in one room. And I was really appreciative that I could have my students come in and not start with things being tidy or things being narrated, but instead an installation that had people from parts of the world we often don't have take up a lot of rooms in our classroom, be the ones that make us respond, so that we are sort of the objects the art is working upon. And it's really useful for students to not think of themselves always as the subject standing over the cells and the data, but instead feeling themselves receiving the force of artists elsewhere. So there are all these ways in which this installation also made Black and brown bodies the center of the conversation, as well as the meshing of bodies and place. And I was also grateful for that energy, that I had students who knew this geography or who had heard of certain artists, and they could then feel at home in the class because they could explain to the rest of us some of the ideas. There was one piece that stood out for me. It was actually an artist statement, and this is especially powerful in the context of teaching climate change. And I'll read to you the inscription. It's from Penny Siapis. Forgive me for butchering her name, but Siapis says of the series Warm Waters, quote, "With global warming, what do we imagine? Burning? Drowning? Absolute alterity? And what forms or formlessnesses do we imagine this through?" I found that really provocative. It connects, I teach The Fire Next Time, the James Baldwin book, and these questions about the world ending in fire or the world ending with a rainbow or ending in a flood are really powerful in the Jewish and Christian imaginations. And the ideas of judgment that are expressed through this excess, the apocalyptic imagination. But also this, I thought that this artist really challenged the idea that, like, first you're human and you're alive, and then you're dead and you meet God and you find out if you're going to heaven and hell. She was really thinking there's not fine edges to what it is to be in the world, whether you're an octopus with your many hearts or whether you're a human being located on an island by an imperial force. There are ways of inhabiting the world that are also just going to keep changing. So no one's going to, like, blow the whistle with climate change and say that's the end of volume one. We're going to keep going even as we suffer and even as we explore and create, and we're going to be different as a result. So I really learned from that challenge. Andrew, what did you think of the installation piece at the end where you're participating in walking forward, walking backward, on the female voice narrating the boundary?
Yeah, I think that was the Shilpa Gupta exhibit. Yeah, I really, I thought that one, that whole section of the exhibit was really neat. You know, teaching about sort of hardening borders that are becoming, you know, one of the things that geographers have been interested in the last 20 years is the proliferation of walls and fences around the world, and on at boundaries that had maybe been formally demarcated before, but they didn't have, you know, constant fencing and things that are violent and that can really hurt people. So I thought that was an interesting part where you put on the headphones and you listen and it tells you where to go. Because not only does it bring attention to the increased presence of the state, but also the way that the state, you know, in these areas where there is more state attention being brought to the borders, is sort of shaping people. And, you know, I mean, it's very bodily, right? Where, how you're being present, how you're being presented, how, you know, in a moment the voice can turn very harsh and tell you that you're doing something wrong, or it can grant you presence and let you cross through.
Right. I was thinking about, sorry to interrupt for a sec, but that, I was struck that about a couple of moments. Like, one is you could have your house be located 3 feet from the line, and that's the difference mm-hmm. between living in your ancestral home or not being able to visit your sister when she has a baby, depending on which side of the line you're on. And yeah. Another reference to mudslides and thinking about the earth itself is not stable. So where does that line mm-hmm. end up after a huge storm when there's been disorientation of the physical world?
Yeah, or even the actual, you know, where the boundaries are at all. I mean, for all boundaries, there's an arbitrariness to them. So to have that arbitrariness exist, you know, one of the things with hardening it is then it feels less, it's more real. But I think part of the voice is trying to get at that arbitrariness of it. You're okay one second, and now you're being told to move somewhere else the second. So yeah, and you know, and maybe in that same sort of thinking about the physical land moving too. I mean, there's sort of a force that's beyond your control when these shifts happen. And if you're just happen to be living in one of these areas where there's so much attention being paid to.
Yeah, it reminded me of visiting Hebron, which is a really hard border and which has been evacuated. So the Israeli soldiers are in the streets, but the former residents of Hebron are not allowed on them. But the spaces still have so much meaning and there just aren't people there. I was also interested in the female voice there that was the voice of authority. It could have been incidental, like it was a female artist doing the installation. And it also was interesting to me to think of the female inhabiting the voice of the state, giving these injunctions, like step forward, step back, whether that was also subverting all the maleness of regulating militias, regulating borders.
Yeah, that gender aspect had not occurred to me, so that's a valuable insight. I'd say another part of that exhibit that I liked a lot that I had, I was just going through the catalog, because when I had visited, I remembered that, but I'd kind of forgotten about these other pieces, but I thought they were really neat, which was showing, it was, you know, it looked to me like pressed paper. They were white sheets, but you could see a boundary on them, and they were often, like that was all the images are, but they're often in the shape of organic features like plants or trees. And then there's a length being given on the bottom, like in meters or feet. And I thought that was really interesting too, because not only does it sort of, you know, emphasize just the boundary drawing, but to have that very technical, artificial, you know, just number, oh, it's this, we measured it, it's this long. But then to juxtapose that with such an organic shape, which is, I don't know, I guess that kind of speaks to the artificiality of it, but then the way...
I hear you. I guess I'm struck by that. Like, we have an obsession with quantifying. Part of being modern is we put things into numbers and metrics, and we have a sense if it's real, if it's been measured, or if the state's fully claimed its territory. And then there's sort of... Some things can't be reduced to measurement, and so it becomes absurd when you measure some kinds of plants and some kinds of territories. So there were some things that were being played with there. I'm like, here are the sonic movements in this part of India, and I'm folding my paper to represent that. And it's both making visible something that's metric and making us think it's really an obsession that we have with control when there are so many currents that are always making us change at the same time. So I really like this as a teaching tool, having students walk through the exhibit. I also liked the degree of off-campness of the McMullen, where you can have a field trip there in a way that's, it's a little more cumbersome to get to the MFA. And I've taken students there before. There was an installation on Spanish abstract artists. It was harder to use as a teaching piece, but I still think the students were glad to be treated as people with like more sensory capacity than just here's a book and here's a computer.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's, you know, the other valuable thing about it that COVID has kind of undone is, you know, like the piece, the Gupta piece we've just been talking about, that so, you know, more, it's more than text, it's more than even visual, it's audio, you're physically moving your body. There's, other video that has audio components and sort of how that gets lost when we're just in the classroom. And, you know, in particular, this was a challenge for me teaching this contested borders class, because I had wanted, you know, how do you account for, I think it's hard to account for a border without going to one. Boston College has field trips that it organizes over the summer, so I'm forgetting the exact program, to send people down to the border between U.S. and Mexico. A number of my students had been on it. And that experience itself, that field trip, allows sort of the juxtapositions of things you see, the contrasts. I think that there's sort of a, for my own research, where I've been to the borderland between Kazakhstan and China, there's a sort of a feeling, and there are the different feelings in different places, but that you experience when you're at these places where there's a lot going on. So it was very valuable to be able to experience it in that way. And we also had an assignment that was going to be wearing VR and then watching these 360-degree YouTube videos. But of course, in March, putting VR equipment on your face that other people have recently touched. It was a bad idea, so.
Right. That's so amazing how technology suddenly is a whole different status. Right. Yeah.
Now we just have to quarantine and we can't go to the simulations of the border.
I think students really want to learn that way. I think they want to create things too. I think they would, like, if invited to create art pieces as part of a final project or to submit, have professors nominate two of the best material art pieces could be installed, or the kind of portfolios our students created for Where on Earth that you helped, and Professor Seraphine helped them to develop. Because some of them were really interested in looking in exhibits like at the Tate Modern, and that people who were refugees, migrants had made that represent what they've left behind, these collections of objects, because a lot of the students' lives are also collections of objects.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess it also exposed to me how much I didn't know about the Indian Oceans. I learned some history. I studied, I work on this intellectual political theorist, Hannah Arendt. She was a stateless person from Germany. She was Jewish, lived in Germany, and had to flee. So she's both bringing this intellectual tradition from Germany of phenomenology and worlds. And she's who helps me think about borders and statelessness, and a lot of my students too. But we don't talk enough in my classroom about worlds being made and unmade in other parts of the world.
Hmm. Well, I'm curious then, from sort of the perspective of taking Hannah Arendt's ideas and putting it down, I mean, did you see elements of her thinking and in your teaching as well, where it seemed to really work together well, and then other elements where it seemed, yeah, and I'm curious as well, like you're talking about how the making and unmaking doesn't necessarily show up, but do you find that there's maybe limitations as well, just sort of in the worldliness of Hannah Arendt not knowing, just as, you know, we were saying, not knowing a lot about Indian Ocean. I haven't read, I'm sure, as much as her work is as yours, but it's very Eurocentric.
It is. It's very Eurocentric. And in that way, I mean, I think she's one of those intellectuals who's able to keep writing and to be received as having a tradition behind her in a way that keeps elevating the German tradition as respectable. But she's written some really beautiful pieces on refugees that are about loss, that are about the temptation of suicide, and that kind of sadness and loss doesn't get into the classroom either, and I think that's present in the exhibit. There's one video of the woman standing in the ocean that I found really beautiful, the currents, the waves kind of pulling her forward and backward, and that's, in some ways, that seemed like a Eurocentric image in my imagination, because I think of like Kate Chopin and Virginia Woolf and like the ocean, the waters as like a site of death, but also a place of renewal. And to think about women standing in the ocean off the coast of Africa or India, and I thought they have a whole other relationship to what's happening in that ocean than the one that I get from England. And I wanted to learn more. But I'm also always wanting to learn more, and sometimes sort of my job around the art is just to become speechless.
Well, you know, I think it's interesting as well that you mentioned the grenade one, because that was one where coming in, doing this borders and boundaries class where, I mean, you heard me going on about the map and other ones where it's like having the border and the boundary clear in it. Going into the exhibit and kind of looking for that was one thing. So when I got to the rubber sort of grenade things, I was just sort of like, I just don't know where to place this. I was like, I'm not really sure what to make of this. So I thought, yeah, I don't know. I guess that was sort of the limits of approaching it from a very sort of either as boundaries or challenges of boundaries. What do you do with an object that just doesn't really, it's just something totally else. And then, yeah.
Right. Yeah, we're not trained to deal with that. Absolute alterity.
Like when you just called it a grenade, I was like, wow, that was...
Yeah, I looked in the artist statement. He didn't reference grenade. It was the sewing together of tires inside out. The description of the artist statement was like, this is about like gender and the maleness of this hard leather and the femaleness of these ribbons. And I was like, wow, did not get that at all. But
well, I thought another one that was neat, but I'm wondering what the exact... I don't remember exactly what it was supposed to be, but... I brought an interpretation to it that I wanted to. It was the Hajra Wahid piece that was like rocks with what looked like some kind of, again, metric measurement next to it, like it was being analyzed for content. But then the sort of spiky seismograph-looking stuff. And I think she had been raised on a some settlement for oil extraction or something, but the idea of the ocean floor being measured. I mean, this is another sort of terra incognita, right? That is increasingly under the International Seabed Authority being mapped and then being leased to countries basically for ocean floor strip mining to look for nodules of precious metals that can be extracted. And I thought that was another way that, again, we think of the or I do, and I think a lot of people do, to go back to kind of the, you know, movies like The Abyss and stuff, which is, I guess, kind of an old movie now, but you go down to the ocean floor and it's like, no one has been down there. It's unknown. It's kind of like space. But just like this with, you know, with space, we often hear about asteroid mining and this is being developed seriously or thought about, and same with ocean floor resource extraction. So I just thought, you know, this is, again, it's another sort of frontier for capitalism to go down there and mess it all up, and then it'll be beyond the visibility of us.
Right. So do you think that could be linked to social action for your students? Is this also a work of conscience?
Yeah, I mean, I would hope so. I think it's important to think about it. I mean, I think once we know more about it, and then, right, once it is on the map, so to speak, and we see the ways in which, oh, you know, the United States or the country you're from might have a claim to this, and let's look at other histories of areas that are in the physical landscape that have been strip mined. And I know that Professor Willard and I, as part of this class, we showed this documentary about the Anthropocene, and we talked about the Anthropocene and taught on it. That was one of the things about it was the visual strikingness of looking at, say, the tar sands and things. And I think for students in the class, this was striking. And I mean, and you could hear the concern. And a lot of their projects, the final projects, were about environmental concern. So I think it's a challenge. I think it's a real challenge in general to get us, right, to be not just to care for it, but to act on that and to have serious concern and to think about solutions. And it's a real hard challenge. But I think the more materials and the more interaction, right, having exhibits like this puts it on the map.
I think it does in an oblique way. Like, I think there's plenty in the Boston College curriculum that's pretty direct about sites of ethical concern, like, you know, hunger, incarceration, exploitation. And then there are other ethical practices, like learning about difference or learning about transience, learning about the arbitrary, that are harder to grasp and that this exhibit works with. So, like, even just to think about, well, people are like strip mining the bottom of the ocean floor, that's wild. Or islands are being created artificially in the Pacific Rim, wow, that's wild. Like, that's something that the students would be grappling with, not as just like a dogmatic instruction, but instead as like, well, my generation is gonna have to really do some thinking about how they respond to this.
We've got a number of more pieces to go through yet.
It's so interesting having this conversation with you. And I feel like we're kind of picking up where we left off as co-teachers. But also, this is the stuff that makes a university great. When you start talking to someone and you realize they have these ways of opening up a world to you, or some new vocabulary that teaches you something, or you have a shared experience, but you've come away with things you want to sort of check in with somebody or get their perspective. And it's always a pleasure with you, Professor Grant. I hope we have many more art exhibits we can go check out together.
Yeah, thank you. I agree. And totally, that sort of idea of, you know, bringing interdisciplinary perspectives to it, and also ways of making it just sort of timely and present in other contexts. I thought, like when you were discussing James Baldwin, I thought that was a good provocation way to think about it, and really brings it home. And I think that was a neat thing about just, we can bring so much to these exhibits and these art pieces and take back with it. And while, you know, we leave a little there perhaps, and take it with us as well, and can integrate this. And, you know, as well, just you talking about your students' perspectives that they brought. And I know my students also brought a fantastic number of perspectives and interpretations to the pieces. So it's great. Yeah.
So thank you, McMillan staff. Thank you for putting this conversation together. Person falls out of touch with colleagues during COVID. And also thank you for having such a thoughtful space of artistic political, ethical, intellectual inquiry, where you put these materials out for students to learn from and for professors to learn from. We enjoyed it. Enjoyed the conversation.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, we'll be there next time.
That concludes this episode of Art in Focus. Thank you for listening, and be sure to visit The Terrace, the Macmullen Student Publications page, to find more episodes in the series. This episode was produced by Rachel Brody, the Macmullen Graduate Assistant and a doctoral candidate in the History Department. It was mixed and edited by Anisha Momin, class of 2021. And thank you to Rachel Chamberlain, the Macmullen Manager of Education, and Megan Minahan, class of 2022, who lent production support. And finally, to our Publications Committee, who uploaded these videos on The Terrace.